This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
The F Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show. Bringing you another perspective since 2007.
Welcome to the F Word. The F Word is a syndicated show produced in Vancouver, BC, Canada at CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's cooperative radio station. And every Monday from noon to one, we broadcast live from the downtown east side of Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish territory. I'm Nicole Deegan. I'm your host today, also the host of The Cold That Never Ends, and have been, of course, it's fantastic for radio. I've been stuffed up for about 6 weeks now. Anyways, last week, Pivot Legal Society and a group of women's organizations called on the government of BC to work with women's groups to find innovative solutions to fix a justice system that's failing women who've experienced violence. Imagining Courts That Work for Women Survivors of Violence is the name of a new report which was released on November 27th. It looks at the experiences of women within BC's criminal justice system and explores innovative solutions from other jurisdictions. Some of the women's organizations that were involved in this project, other than Pivot Legal Society, were WAVA, Women Against Violence Against Women, Battered Women Support Services, Kiwassa Neighborhood House, YWCA of Greater Vancouver, and Atira Women's Resource Center. I spoke the other day with Darcy Bennett, the campaign's director at Pivot Legal Society, about this report, and today I will be airing that interview. You recently released the report, Imagining Courts That Work for Women Survivors of Violence, which calls on the government of BC to work with women's groups to fix the justice system. You say that it's failing women who've experienced violence. What do you mean by that?
So this report, in terms of looking at women's experiences with the criminal justice system, doesn't really say too much that hasn't already been recorded pretty well elsewhere in terms of the impact that engaging with the justice system has for women. There's a major issue in terms of consistency of response from community to community, from officer to officer, from Crown Council to Crown Council. So that's one thing that we see really across the board, is that there's a very inconsistent response in terms of the interaction they have with the police, the relationship they can build with Crown, whether or not they get hooked into victim services. So all of these things have a really negative impact on a lot of women's experiences and actually prevent them from engaging with the process or reaching out again. We wanted to look particularly at the experience that women have when they're in the criminal courts. But as we started to talk to women and get their stories, we realized that those experiences are also sort of bookended by the experience they have with the police, both in terms of being first responders and also in terms of enforcing orders. And that there's also a lot of crossover between family law cases that are all often going on concurrently with criminal law cases in women's lives. So the focus of this report is really, what is the specialized response that could improve this? Because right now we have a situation where women are often feeling that they're very unsafe, even coming and going from the courthouse, and often feeling really unsafe in the courthouse. We have stories in this report of women being approached while waiting to go in and testify by friends and family of the abuser who's trying to push them to not take the stand. So even in that sphere of the courthouse, women are feeling unsafe. We had a lot of stories about women meeting Crown for the first time 5 minutes before, not really being able to talk about what their wants or their needs.
5 minutes before they were going
into court. Not being kept in the loop in terms of what's going on. And when orders are being made, having really contradictory orders, one thing from family court, another thing from criminal court, or having orders that aren't enforced. So protection orders where there's supposed to be no contact, but not getting a good response when they call that in. And so eventually they sort of give up. and then that later on, if there is an incident, is sort of used to blame them as victims for not engaging with the process. So
when you're talking about that in particular, you mean like, say a woman gets a restraining order against mm-hmm. somebody, and then he makes contact with her, she phones the police, and then they don't respond in the same way that in the same spirit that the restraining order was given?
Exactly. Yeah. So either there isn't a response or not a quick response, or they ask, well, what did he do when he came here? And maybe this time he didn't, or it was hard to explain. And so eventually she stops calling. And then when there is an incident and she calls in and they say, well, you know, he's been coming and going. So there's not a lot of support for women to really exercise those orders. And that's really, really important. So some of the things that we call for in this report are specialized courts where you're going to have specialized professionals, so Crown, who are really engaged in working with women, understanding what might be going on in their lives, what might they need to be able to feel like they can engage with this process.
Can you explain a little bit what the role of Crown might be for people who might not be familiar?
When there's charges laid, or even the decision to lay charges. So oftentimes people think a woman's deciding, I want to lay charges or I don't want to lay charges. That decision actually rests with Crown Counsel. And sort of, so when it enters into that criminal justice sphere, the victim is no longer who is sort of the aggrieved party. It's the Crown, it's the government. And so Crown is prosecuting the case. He or she is not a lawyer for the victim. The victim is not represented. Basically, Crown's role is to make the case, and defense counsel's role is to defend the accused. And the victim is often unsupported in the process in terms of what they want, and in some cases are sort of made to feel like what they want really doesn't matter. And become sort of pieces of evidence rather than actors who we need to keep safe. And so shifting that is really important. One of the reasons that a number of jurisdictions have gone with specialized courts is because of this issue that they call sort of victim non-cooperation. And we'd like to sort of shift that language and think about what are the reasons that women are choosing or are being forced not to engage. Police respond to an incident. There's some evidence that an assault has taken place. Maybe neighbors call, maybe she called because violence was escalating. He's taken in, charges are laid, he's out the next day. And then the process goes on from there, sometimes for months before it will ever go to trial. And in the process, he's telling her, like, you don't want me to go to jail. What about our kid, you know, I'll lose my job or whatever. And she's making a decision and maybe says, okay, I'm not going to show up, or I'm going to go to Crown and beg with them to drop these charges. So this idea that the victims aren't cooperating, or when that doesn't happen and she asks again and again, maybe goes and says, I don't remember what happened. So what traditionally that's been looked at as like sort of uncooperative victims or victims recanting, but what we really need to be looking at is what else is going on for her? How long is this process being dragged out? Because we know from the evidence across North America that the more quickly these issues can be resolved, the easier it is for the woman to continue to engage in the process, and the more likely it is that the offender is going to take something in from that process too in terms of accountability. So timelines are a really important piece in specialized courts. We also know that she often has family issues that are ongoing, and there's not a lot of communication right now between family courts and criminal courts, and that's a really important piece. And in Toronto, they've actually developed Canada's first integrated court that looks at those two systems together, and a single judge can hear both. And so that's really important, because oftentimes she's got a no contact order and from through the criminal process, and then is supposed to be facilitating access.
Is she often dealing with both court systems because so much violence against women is perpetrated by partners?
Exactly what we're talking about there, is where the perpetrator is also the father of her child, and quite often the joint guardian of her child. So, and that's where we really get to this issue of a specialized response. That's really, really different than other kinds of crimes. And so to try to treat them the same and have this sort of one-size-fits-all approach really isn't very effective when there's this sort of forced engagement, and oftentimes that engagement is around the children. And for a lot of women, sending a child for a visit, an access visit, where they're not there, where there's been violence, can be scary. So again, this idea of, well, maybe we should stay together so then I'm here with the child. There's also a financial relationship that's ongoing, and that's another really important piece of this to recognize, is that the financial implications of anything that happens to him can be felt really profoundly by her. So recognizing all those pieces are at play, making sure that women do have support in the family process and that the systems are talking to each other. Sometimes there's also child welfare involvement, especially if police have been called to the home on multiple occasions. So there's concerns there. And then, of course, for some women, there's also concerns around their immigration status, particularly for women who've been sponsored. So there's all of these competing pieces going on. And so we need a system that recognizes that those are all the things that are going on and in a woman's life when she's engaging with this process. And if that process isn't supportive, if she's being bounced around from one crown to another, if victim service response isn't quick and effective, and if she doesn't feel safe even going to the courthouse, the justice system just isn't going to achieve its goals.
Pivot Legal Society and a group of women's organizations are calling on the government of BC to work with women's groups to find innovative solutions to fix a justice system that's failing women who've experienced violence. They released their report, Imagining Courts That Work for Women Survivors of Violence, last week. And this is the second part of my interview with Darcy Bennett, the campaign's director of Pivot Legal Society.
You looked into some of the solutions in other jurisdictions, specifically when you're talking about the specialized courts or specialized workers. Mm-hmm. Is that happening in a lot of different places, and are they seeing that it's helping a lot?
So BC is actually one of the few Canadian jurisdictions that doesn't have specialized courts, with the exception of one small pilot project in Duncan, British Columbia. So we're actually relative latecomers to this, and the great thing about that is that we have about 20 years of data that we can look at from other places and see what's working, what isn't working. And there are very big differences between courts. Some courts have a very, very strong sort of therapeutic component to them, where they're really looking at how do we sort of repair these wrongs, what kind of programs and interventions do we need for offenders. And that's an important piece, because there are lots of women who are going to continue to have relationships, so having appropriate programs and supports for offenders is an important piece. But there's also cases where criminal justice system response is really required, so investigative and prosecutorial guidelines that focus on taking some of the emphasis off the woman as sort of the key witness and key holder of evidence, that speed up the timelines, that make sure that she's kept informed, and that offer additional supports is another really important piece and can make a really big difference.
The movement towards mediation in family courts, when that started, you know, 20 years ago or so, to really have legs, it was a real risk for women who were fleeing abuse, because then they ended up having to do therapy with their abuser. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about not necessarily engaging in a therapeutic process with somebody who has been beating you for 10 years mm-hmm. or raping you. You're talking about those people should go into a criminal system, but some people, maybe there's some opportunity for that relationship to be dealt with differently.
Or even for that offender to have part of his sentence or have the option of going to programs that are going to deal with not just sort of this anger management or substance use issue that we sometimes see being, and even that's not happening because of wait lists. And so specialized probation also becomes very, very important. But definitely an important piece is programs for offenders, because at some point most offenders are going to be back out, but not in terms of that responsibility resting with the woman to be there and to be part of that, and not as an alternative to criminal responsibility. So that was one of the questions that we were really grappling with, is what model of specialized court. We sort of recognized early on that some kind of specialization was important, but the group of women who are working on this had a lot of questions about this idea that a specialized response could sort of marginalize the issue of violence against women or make it seem like it is a less serious form of assault. But there's a number of models that really start from working with the woman, Crown working with the woman, seeing what she wants, seeing what's sort of possible in this context, and having a range of appropriate responses. And a couple of the really, really important pieces in some of the most effective specialized courts is having what they call file ownership. Some courts have this with Crown, some actually have it with the judges as well, usually in smaller communities, where each time the same Crown, the same prosecutor is there and dealing with this person. So this sort of pattern becomes apparent, and there's this sort of accountability coming back time after time. And in some cases they also have what they call judicial ownership. So you're seeing the same judge time after time, and they're kind of monitoring that progress as well. So recognizing that intimate partner violence is often a pattern of behavior. So our criminal justice system by and large focuses on the one incident. You know, this day at 10 a.m. did he, you know, kick the woman? Like, did this physical act happen? And oftentimes in relationship, the more important piece is this ongoing pattern of power and control, and the violence is just the piece that punctuates that. So by having this ongoing type of relationship, when the breach occurs and nothing really happens except for he comes and maybe calls her names and it comes back before the judge and the Crown's there again, they understand that breach in the context of, you know, we told you, you are not to go, you're not to contact her, and there's this accountability that's built in. And so that's a really, really important piece when you're dealing with this relationship violence.
So you were talking about different models of specialized court systems. Is it possible to kind of outline a little bit of what it might look like for a woman to go through the model that you're recommending for BC?
One of the things that we sort of came to at the end of this was that there's probably more work and more consultation to do around what the right model is for British Columbia, because communities are so different. So, for example, in the Yukon, there's a very hands-on domestic violence court where judges are meeting with offenders throughout sort of their sentence to see what their progress is, which probably wouldn't work in such a big community as in Vancouver. But basically what we're looking at is dedicated space and time. So not even necessarily a dedicated courthouse. A lot of domestic violence courts are 1 or 2 days dedicated in an existing courthouse. That there would be dedicated, specially trained Crown and potentially judiciary as well. And they would be working with specialized police, or at least police that have had in-depth training around how to collect evidence, that there'd be a very clear victim service response that is triggered automatically when police respond, whether or not charges are laid, and that's tied into community services. So that's another really important piece, is that we have a really strong anti-violence sector and lots of programs that can provide that support. So that connecting piece is really important. That there would be an opportunity for women to meet with a family lawyer if they need to, an immigration lawyer, a financial assistance worker in-house. So one thing that we know is that when women are going through violence and possibly the breakdown of a relationship and they have young children, there's a lot of pulls on their time. They're being pulled in a lot of directions. They don't necessarily have the finances to be traveling from place to place. So making that really simple is a really important piece. And interestingly, this project sort of got started for us here in the Downtown East Side because of the Downtown Community Court. About a year after the Downtown Community Court had come into being, and that's a specialized model that's meant to deal with a very particular problem. People who are living in poverty, and there's mental health issues potentially, and so they're kind of coming through the criminal justice system. That model really does a good job in terms of holistic services for offenders, but it's a very offender-focused model. And what we realized was actually in this neighborhood, violence against women cases were going to the Downtown Community Court. And we were at first kind of confused about why this was happening, but then found out it was because there was sort of a last-minute change in all summary offenses that happen in a particular geographic area were going there. And what we realized is it's a great specialized model for one particular issue, but it's not a great specialized model for a very different issue where instead of the offender being someone who is facing multiple challenges and doesn't have a lot of power, it's actually a power-based crime. So we need to shift that. And so one of the things we were imagining as we started to get some stats and found out that actually 20% of the cases that the Downtown Community Courts are hearing are violence against women cases, right? What if we were to pull a day a week and shift it and have different kinds of victim supports there, have Crown come in who are specialized in violence against women versus the specialized Crown that they have now, and sort of shift that orientation. So that's one possible way of imagining what's happening. That's what's happening in Duncan, is it's in their regular courthouse, but it's a particular day that's dedicated.
So really, a lot of this is looking at the real experiences of women going through the courts and looking at how can the justice system become truly effective in dealing with the crimes that are committed against women. So that requires some specialized knowledge and understanding and processes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's really starting in that experience of what's it going to be like for a woman. Police have responded, maybe he's gone, maybe he's back, she's got children and bills to pay and she's entering the system. What's going to actually make it work for her and possibly hold him accountable at the same time? Because nobody benefits when women feel like they can't call police again, when women are choosing not to come forward and testify in hopes that this problem will go away, or where they're sort of suffering through and being very confused about they've got a family court order that says one thing, a criminal court order that says something else, and are just sort of pulling their hair out, trying to be sort of good victims, if you will, and do everything police and Crown are telling them to, and they're still sort of coming up against all of these roadblocks. So it's not working for anyone, and it's not cost effective, it's not preventing future crimes. So I think there's a lot to be learned from other models and from recognizing that if we start from the place of what do women need to be safe and build out from there, rather than thinking about sort of high level protocols and risk assessments, we're going to get a good result, and we're going to be able to use things like risk assessment more effectively because we're engaging women and they're calling and they're getting involved. And we may also be able to shift attitudes among offenders, whether that's through just accountability and timeliness, and not being able to bully victims into recanting because they feel supported, or whether it's through more appropriate interventions when they're in the correction system or when they're on probation. So there's a lot to be gained.
You mentioned in the press release around this report that this is a critical time for our government to work with women's organizations on this. I know that some of these suggestions have been made for a really long time by different women's organizations, probably by you guys before, maybe not exactly to this degree, but you know, some of these ideas have been put forward. What do you think has stopped our government from moving on these ideas, say 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago? And do you have hope that they're going to now?
So when we started this report, we really didn't know whether it would go anywhere. And then sort of through that time, Mary Ellen Terpelafon, who's the representative for children and youth, was sort of instrumental actually in starting specialized courts in Canada. And she has called for specialized courts based on her investigations into homicides involving women and children. And so there was kind of this glimmer of there might be a champion. But since then, a new provincial domestic violence officer has been appointed, and BC is undergoing what they call the Justice Reform Initiative. So sort of an overhaul, which they call modernizing BC's justice system. And the first report for that also mentioned domestic violence courts, which was interesting and important, but also a bit concerning in that it was just sort of thrown into a sentence about problem-solving courts that reference the Downtown East Side and this sort of list. So what we really feel like is the critical moment right now is if we're going to go this way, and we are such latecomers, we need to do it right. And the way to do it right is to actually engage women-serving organizations, women who've been through the system, and start from their knowledge and their expertise, and also to learn from 20 years of experience throughout Canada. So that critical moment is in terms of we're going to build something from the ground up, and it's much harder to shift something that's already in place. So making that happen, because we need political will. There's a resource question, but there's also a long-term resource gain. We know that these cases are long and time-consuming. We know that they're a significant draw on criminal justice system resources. And we know that the fallout implication of violence not being addressed is felt very strongly in the health sector, income security, and all of these places. But the way that the Justice System Reform Initiative has sort of framed it is around timeliness, administration of justice, efficiencies. And to me, those are important byproducts. They're great byproducts of specialization, but specialization needs to start around women's safety and accountability for gendered violence. And if we start from there, we're going to get all kinds of good effects. Some of those will be related to like smoother administration of justice. And some of those will be related to reduced health costs. And some of those will be related to what we hope to see, which would be a reduction in violence against women.
And if the government doesn't move on this or doesn't do it thoughtfully and with consultation, I guess the potential is that things will just stay as they are, and our rates of violence against women and homicides, domestic homicides, will stay the same.
We know that, you know, protocols on a page don't mean a lot if there's not a lot of buy-in. So the buy-in is really, really important, and women's groups are a really important ally. So if you have one system, a community-based system of supporting women, that's not talking, not engaging to sort of a justice system, professional, bureaucratic system response, you're actually missing a huge opportunity, and women are falling through the cracks. So it's really, really important that this be a partnership, and that we invest early and at the beginning in getting this right, and that we get the right people at the table to make this happen, and really value that there is a lot of expertise. There's infinite reports, both community-based and academia, coming out of the government that are telling us what isn't working. I don't think there's any dispute there. What's really important is that our perspective on how we fix that is grounded in women's experiences rather than in sort of, you know, if we just get our database talking to each other right, these problems are going to be fixed. That's a piece of it, and we want those technical pieces to be working. But the most important piece is that orientation around what's this like for the woman who steps into the courthouse, or the woman who is at home with the police officer's card because he's left with her partner and now has to figure out what to do. And if we make the system easy to navigate and appropriate to that woman, we're going to have better responses.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this.
Well, thank you for coming up.
The F Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show, effing up the airwaves since 2007.